I know you're not going to be putting this in the podcast, but did you want to know how to say our last names?
Oh, yes, I do. Please.
So my name is K-A-U-R, but it's like core. So it's like, core. You know, your core, like strengthen okay. your core.
Got it.
Yes. So if it would be C-O-R-E, so that's how you pronounce it.
Got it.
Thank and hers you. Is a tough one.
Mine is a really tough one. So it's Anand Bhullar. So the B-H-U-L-L-A-R is Bhullar Malhotra. You can just even say Anand. It's fine. You don't have to.
Wait, say it one more time.
Our Bhullar is easier.
Yeah, Bhullar. Yeah, just say Anand Bhullar.
Bhullar?
Yes, Bhullar. Yes.
Bhullar. Okay. Hey, you guys, this is The Mean Podcast, and I'm your host, Kristen Filipkowski. The Mean Podcast is where I talk to creative, curious, and ambitious women who are diving headfirst into the second half of their lives. Turning 50 doesn't mean it's time to fade into the background. It means we know what we're doing, and we're not afraid to do it. Hey, everyone. I have a very special episode for you this week. In a Mean Show first, we have two guests this week. So a tiny bit of background first. When I conceived of this podcast, my initial idea was to bring together women from different generations who were in the same field. I imagined, for example, a dream interview would be maybe Gloria Steinem with Emma Gonzalez talking together about feminism today and in the past, or maybe a baby boomer stem cell researcher in an interview with a millennial stem cell researcher. So you get the idea, two different generations, and we would talk about how things have changed, how things are different today, what's good, what's bad, etc. That turned out to be easier said than done. It was kind of tough to find those pair-ups. So I decided to focus initially on midlife women in my podcast interviews. But as luck would have it, a pair of women came into my life recently who fulfill my multi-generational vision. This power duo is Roz Kaur and Anand Bhullar, the team behind a new sustainable fashion brand called House of Hindi. Roz is based in California and Anand is in India. And Roz is Anand's aunt. Roz is also a stylist for Anthropology here in California. And she is one of the most stylish, seriously, you guys, check out her Instagram, one of the most stylish 50-something women I have ever seen in my entire life. She's amazing. You got to check her out. I love this conversation so much. Anand talks about trying to appeal to the TikTok generation, you know, which wants 3-second gratification always, with a product that takes literally 8 months to create. They start with literally the wool that grows on the sheep, and they take the product all the way through to an actual garment. They take this product from beginning to end. It's extremely impressive. It's extremely sustainable. It's a beautiful product. So you guys should also check out the House of Hindi Instagram. And then Roz talks about the unique challenges that come with our relationship to fashion and style as we dive into middle age. Her incredible confidence and energy really comes through in this audio. I felt so inspired after we talked. It was a really wonderful conversation. And they both talk about their partnership and how their different perspectives deepen their relationship and also deepen the value of their business. So let's get right into it. You guys, I have another exciting first on this episode. It's my first sponsorship. I'm so excited. So today's sponsor is Usual Wines. So even if you're going to skip forward on this ad, like I know I always do on podcasts, go and check them out at www.usualwines.com. Use my discount code MEAN, M-E-A-N, to get $8 off your first order and try your first glass on me. Cheers. So a little bit more about Usual Wines. They come in 6.3-ounce bottles. So it's like your own personal bottle. It's a heavy pour, or about a glass and a half of wine. So no more pouring wine down the sink when you don't want to finish a whole bottle. If you're not sharing it with someone, or even sometimes sharing it with someone, it's like a bit too much for me in on a, like a school night, a work night. It's the perfect way to sort of self-limit and have just like the perfect amount of wine on, you know, a night when you're just kind of wanting to have a glass with dinner, but not overdo it. Also, the wine is really yummy. I have to say my favorite one is the sparkling. And it's really exciting that they have sparkling because, you know, you can like have a glass of sparkling just on like a Wednesday and not feel bad about wasting the bottle. Also, usual wines are made from world-class AVAs, which stands for American Viticultural Area in California. So the areas where the grapes come from include Napa, Sonoma, Santa Barbara, and all the wines are made with minimal intervention, zero sugar, and zero additives. The wines are low carb and have 0 grams of sugar. Low carb is key for me right now. I'm doing keto, you guys. Don't tell anyone, but I'm doing keto. I'm just going to see how it goes. I just want to fit in my jeans again. But anyway, back to usual wines. They have a red blend, a rosé, and a sparkling, which I mentioned. They also have a limited production Brut Rosé. It's only for the summer, though, so go check it out and see if you can still get some. So you guys, once again, go to www.usualwines.com. Use my code MEAN, M-E-A-N, to get $8 off. Anhad and Roz, thank you so much for joining me. I'm so excited to chat with you today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Excited to be here. I'm a fan.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm a fan. I'm a fan right back at both of you. So, Anhad is in India right now, in Delhi, and yes. Roz, you are in Sacramento, right? So yes. We're on opposite ends of the day, but I'm so excited we found a time that we could be together, at least virtually.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Roz, I'd love to start by asking you, how did you first become interested in fashion and style? You've become sort of an icon on Instagram and such an inspiration to women who are, you know, at midlife. And I'm curious to know, how did you first get interested in fashion and style?
Oh my gosh, this is such a great introduction. Thank you so much. I'm honored. Well, I always think of my chic aunt Bibo. You know, she lived in London but spent every summer with us in India. So when I was a little girl growing up, my mom was very creative, but she was not much about fashion. Now, my aunt, on the other hand, seemed so fun and so glamorous to me. She wore bright red lipstick and high heels. And, you know, this was the 70s. So the caftans, the metallic ponchos, and she had these beautiful crocheted tunics and pants and, you know, always wore tons of jewelry and everything from her trenches to her leather jackets. It was, everything was about fringe. And I still remember as a little girl, she would take me to the bazaars and we would buy, you know, silk by the yard, and we would come home and we'd like cut them into neat little squares, which she would either tie around her neck or she would use them as a headscarf. So, you know, that all seemed so much fun to me, that sense of fun, the fun of fashion, how it made me feel. So that began, you know, in childhood with her.
That sounds amazing. If you could see me right now, I'm like grinning from ear to ear because that just sounds so amazing. Like that style that you just described is so my thing. She sounds amazing.
Totally. I see you on Instagram and I see you in those caftans and, you know, the very 70s that's so in right now.
Yes.
And the headscarves. Oh my gosh. She's just so glamorous. She's in Montreal right now and she still is in high heels. She's 80.
That's so amazing.
Still is walking around in 3-inch heels.
Wow. That's amazing. I can't even wear 3-inch heels anymore and I'm only 52. Oh my gosh. Well, and so this is very exciting because you have sort of joined forces with your niece, who we have here today, Anhad. And I'm curious to hear that story. How did you two join forces? And I mean, either one of you can take this question.
So in the later part of about 2018 and, you know, in the early part of 2019, I had this burning desire. I wanted to do something creative. I just could not figure out what it was. But one thing was for certain. By now, I was pretty comfortable in my own skin. And I had had that aha moment that you have when you turn 50. And I was starting to feel kind of beautiful, you know, from the inside out by actually acknowledging my age and acknowledging my experience and acknowledging the fact that I want to support women and I want to do something to uplift women. And so when Anhad came to me with her vision and this idea, and especially the idea about the Himalayan Tweed Project, I immediately said yes. Because to me, you know, it made me realize how much I had evolved as a woman. And that was such a pivotal moment for me. You know, I'm still evolving every single day.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And so Anhad, can you describe the project a bit?
Yes, of course. So like Roz said, it's been a journey of sorts of kind of a self-awakening project, more so for ourselves than actually for the project itself. And when I, you know, we sort of got together in about 2019, the whole concept was to bring together women of all age groups, of all races, of all social and economic statuses. It was more than just kind of creating a product for demand that, you know, we needed to cater for. So that's what the purpose behind the project was. And we initially started out as an enterprise where we wanted to develop all the different types of textile and weaves that are available in India, because the handloom sector has been, you know, we haven't really paid attention to it. So that's something we started out as. And then simultaneously, this project, which actually my father initiated about a few years ago, and it only came to fruition when we joined hands together with Roz Aunty, and this whole thing started in California. So what we do is we tie up with the local Gaddi tribe, which is in the foothills of the Himalayas in a state called Himachal Pradesh. And we bring on board the wool that they sort of shear over the season. And it's a very short time span that this is available for. And also it's a dying art form. There's not many people who are trying to continue this. So we wanted to, you know, promote this whole cultural reference to the Indian Himalayas. And yes, and then we got on board about 10 to 12 women who are full-time working with us. They're all coming from very humble families in the villages nearby, and they completely make everything we do by hand. So yeah, that's the project in a nutshell.
Wow. And so your family has had a design business in India for several decades. And so is it related to that? And how did the fashion brand stem from the family business?
Yes, absolutely. So I kind of grew up in a design environment. My mom and dad are interior designers and architects, and they run a firm here. We primarily make everything that we do is done by hand. And that kind of, you know, instilled the faith in a beautifully made handcrafted product from a very early age for me. And I was always fascinated with fashion and, you know, traveled the world. I studied abroad, came back to India. And I just figured that there's just so much talent that Indian craft and Indian weavers and Indian just basic household women have. And we just wanted to encash this in a way where it would be a win-win situation for everyone. The audiences learn about a craft, they enjoy a beautiful product, and most importantly, the people making them benefit from the fact that people are appreciating their talent. And it was such a close-knit intersection for me, because growing up in a design environment where I was seeing mom and dad, you know, working so hard to promote the Indian craft and the Indian textile and the way things are made, I just really wanted to do it at an international scale. And that's when, you know, we decided to join hands with Roz Aunty, because she has been such a just strong force of encouragement and support in kind of, you know, me being able to tell the story a bit more, you know, loudly, I can say.
And then Roz, you began this partnership and then pretty quickly, unfortunately, the pandemic came and messed up everyone's plans. And so I'm wondering, how did your partnership change, or how did the project change after the pandemic struck?
Well, obviously, everything did come to a standstill. We were planning to launch it in a big way this summer. So, you know, she had already shipped all the spring summer collection to me. And it's basically right now I have it all sitting in my house. And but also, this is, again, it's such a pivotal time in history with this Black Lives Matter. I think the beauty of being an Indian woman in this space is an opportunity to be able to affect change and be a voice for other women of color. And I think, you know, our time will come. And with our brand, at least, we are starting off with trying to make changes in how Indian fashion and design are perceived internationally. You know, we want the world to know that we're not just a location for factories for fast fashion brands. You know, we have our traditional textiles, and like Anha just said, the handlooms and the handicraft techniques that are so beautiful and that are our pride and our heritage. And, you know, they're all so unique. So at the end of the day, the more diversity I feel any industry has, the more voices it can nurture. And also take into account all the changes towards being inclusive and, you know, respecting all points of view. So I feel when we come back, we'll really come back. And, you know, I'm dreaming big. I'm dreaming big, man.
That's awesome. Wonderful. And yeah, you mentioned the tweed and these textiles. I'm curious to hear more about how they're made and what is special about this textile.
So the first step of the process is we bring the tweed, the raw wool from the Gaddi tribe, which gets hand sorted in our premises in Himachal, which is all done by women. So the whole concept of segregating all the different natural colors of the wool as per their quantity or the quality, and then sort of sorting them out for any, you know, dirt or muck which is in them. So it's kind of like a very tedious job. That's the first step. The second step is then to actually wash it in a very, very small batch approach. Eventually, that leads to the spinning of the yarn, which is again done by hand on the spinning wheel, which is, you know, Gandhi's technique, which he left us with the charkha. I think the whole world knows Gandhi for, you know, making everything by hand and how that sort of movement began. And then the women eventually, after spinning it, transfer the spun wool onto the looms, which is then woven into a yardage. And once the yardage is done, it gets converted into a very beautiful felted material, which is again done by hand. So the entire process takes about, from the shearing of the wool till the completion of the process, it takes about 8 to 10 months, depending upon how much quantity there is and how well the season has been. So that's why it's such a unique product. And it's just the entire process. So what we try to do is we try to use absolutely no chemicals in the entire process. Eventually, once no chemicals are used, we know for a fact that all the softening, all the shearing, everything is done by natural products. Like, we use a lot of natural roots and flowers and plants, leave their beautiful qualities into the material as well. And then comes the no electricity part. Now, since we're doing everything by hand, we're trying to create absolutely no form of mechanical or machinery in the whole process. Oh, wow. So hence no electricity. And the most important part is that we try to use every single bit of product that we have. So the whole concept of generating no waste and trying to be a completely sustainable sort of enterprise kind of stems from the fact that the entire production process is very natural and it's all made by hand. Yes. And most importantly, that it's all done by women. We've got a lovely team of women who work with us. And yeah, it's a beautiful product.
It sounds very, very painstaking. I'm imagining that it's like cold weather garments, or are the garments meant for all seasons?
Yes. So ideally, the tweed is cold weather specific. However, okay. we've tried to kind of develop new products with it, like carpets and upholstery and cushions mm-hmm. that can be used all throughout the year. Like, you know, specifically in California, maybe because it's a little bit hotter in comparison to the rest of the United States. But even in India, I have the chairs that are upholstered with the tweed, and I've kind of used them throughout the summer as well. So it's not really like, of course, I can't wear the clothes during summer, but I can surely use the products that we make with them throughout all seasons. So that's
got it. Okay. And so I'm so excited about your partnership, and I've told Roz that I'm really yeah. interested in you know, partnerships between women of different generations. Absolutely. And, you know, often there are a lot of celebrated partnerships between, you know, a team of two women who are both young in their 20s or 30s, launching a business together. But it's very exciting for me to see two of you, like a woman in her 50s and you, and I'm actually not sure of your age exactly, but
I'm 30.
Okay. So, and since you're the niece, I figured you were significantly younger. But so I'm curious to know what do you love about this partnership? What are the benefits of partnering with someone who is of a different generation?
It is absolutely amazing. I cannot say it enough that we have so much to learn, at least my generation. We're younger than the majority of women entrepreneurs right now, but I genuinely can't say it enough that it is so important to have a mother figure in this case, you know, because it yeah. is so important to have a pivotal woman in your life. It surely is my mom as well as Roz's auntie, and she is literally like my second mom, because, you know, she's kind of walked me through the stages of development of the enterprise. And the way we work together is so beautiful, because it's like there are so many things that I'm yet to learn. And she's got most of them that, you know, she offers me every single day, that I, you know, just feel that this is so fantastic. And I'm so blessed even be working with her. It's just phenomenal. And I'm highly recommended to a lot of girls, even my, like my friends. I mostly tell them that they must collaborate, they must partner with people that they can learn from every single day. So yeah, it's yeah. fantastic.
And Roz, how about from your perspective, how does it feel to work with your niece?
You know, right back at her. You know, we both share the same vision. We are both design driven, and we, you know, it's just in our genes. It's in the family genes that we treasure taste and we treasure quality. We are both big fans of found objects. We love our family heirlooms, you know. We love our layers and textures and patterns. I think it's fantastic. And, you know, I was reading your question. I was thinking about the movie Intern, you know, with Robert De Niro yeah. and Anne Hathaway. That was so perfect, you know, where older entrepreneur pairs up with someone younger and you get this unbeatable combination. So she is, you know, tech savvy. She's enthusiastic. She's also so amazing and at taking Indian sartorial traditions and making them look so super cool, whereas I have the resources and older and wiser contact. So it works. And our goal is also to build a business that goes on for the next 20 years, something that grows slowly and organically.
Yeah.
So it works.
Yeah, sounds like it does. And what are each of your roles? What are each of you doing in the business?
Exactly what Rosandi said. I mean, she has got the immense talent of putting things together, which I can't even imagine doing, because she is so fantastic, like she said, in patterns and textiles. And for me, I really enjoy the research side of it. So it's kind of like a match made in heaven, you know. And when the experience and network comes in, it's like just perfect in terms of marketing and, you know, creating demand for the product. So our roles are quite well defined in that sense, is that Roz's auntie is the front end of our brand, and she is the product, she is the advocate of our concept, the brand, the whole initiative and the drive of creating something for women, by women, cheerleading the whole concept of something sustainable, which is made to last. And she has been the entire research of marketing, the customer profiling, the demand generation, and sort of placing the product at the right places has been her entire forte, which is just so amazing. And whereas I come in, I do the, like, the production side of things, where because I can run around here in India, because I need to be here physically present to kind of go monitor the production unit in the Himachal area, and then, you know, sort of getting all the consignments ready, the design work and sort of the groundwork and the back end research business end of it. Whereas it's like perfect because we're both really good at what we do, and kind of we figured this way out of working together. And yeah, it's amazing.
And I'm always giving her feedback as well, because, you know, I am working in this industry. So I'm always telling her what the customer's looking for. Like right now, she's looking for loungewear, you know. That's all she's doing. She's sheltering in place. You know, nobody's thinking of wearing a fancy dress. Exactly. So that's my role. Like she said, giving her feedback, being the spokesperson, what is the customer looking for, then marketing and sourcing out venues, is where can we place the product, how can we do some pop-ups, and just giving the product more exposure.
Yeah. So when you market the brand, do you think it will be challenging to appeal to customers from different generations? Or do you think that will be sort of a natural fit for the brand? Because I know when brands think of like, who's my customer? Sometimes you think of like a specific age, a specific person. Like,
I honestly, with the last pop-ups we've done, I've seen the response has been bigger. And, you know, the younger generation, if I'm talking about, they've totally sucked it up. Because I just feel they're so much more aware of what's happening in the world right now, and they want to give back. This is not a generation like during the 80s. It was like designer stuff on steroids. We wanted every bag out there. But I think the new generation, they just don't care. At least from what I've seen, they'd rather have something
labels.
That's...
Yes.
They
I think you're right.
Rather have something that's ethically sourced and that's more like an heirloom piece, and they want to know who made my clothes. It's just a very, very different time.
It'll be interesting to see what happens after people are able to sort of move around more freely and go to events, go to parties. It'll be interesting to see what will the approach be of the consumer. I'm curious because I know, Roz, you're a stylist, and so you're seeing what customers want now, and it's very different, I'm sure, from what it's going to be like once the world opens up a little bit. I can imagine. So people are going to be wanting to buy probably party dresses, and I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Well, but you know, one thing I can say for certain, you know, if everybody's looking at fashion the way I look at it. You know, I've never looked at fashion and solely something superficial. It means a great deal about self-expression, how we need to be seen in the world. And, you know, it's about building your own self-esteem. So I don't think those things are ever going to go away, no matter what kind of crisis we are faced with. That's always going to be there.
That's true.
We might not be running to a store to try things on, but I still think that, you know, we would like to buy something new and something that's well made and something that talks about who we are and what's our role in the society.
Yeah, I know. I definitely still want to be shopping.
Sure.
But it's, yeah, it's kind of, I just wish I had more places to go. But I'm curious, Roz, you've been a stylist for many years, and I'm curious to know how you approach personal style for women at midlife, women our age. What are some of the most common complaints that they have, problems that they have, and how do you sort of talk them through?
Well, one thing's for certain, you know, women over 40 or over 45, they start to feel a little bit invisible. They don't feel as attractive. They don't feel as though they have as many options. And I think the traditional idea of the older woman is radically being transformed. And that's where I come in. And I want to be a part of that conversation. I want them to feel that, you know, your attraction is not waning. I want women to recognize that aging is not a curse and we are blessed. And I understand, you know, it is discomforting to see our bodies changing, our faces are changing. But why can't we embrace that? And why can't we love that? And I also think part of the problem is the social media. Everybody's envying other people. We forget, you know, that picture has been altered. They are using a filter. They've got tons of fillers and Botox. And we are losing sight of what it means to be real, what it means to be human. So for me, it's all about building their confidence from the inside out and just celebrating that experience, you know, which the younger people just don't have. We have the life experience. So our style is coming from a truly spiritual, accepting place. The love you have for yourself. And that's one thing that's so precious about life experience. The more you have it, the more that sense can develop. And I just don't think, you know, the younger generation has that. They're very insecure.
Yeah. I mean, I know I was very insecure when I was younger. You know, it's a lifelong journey to be totally at ease with yourself, I feel like. But do you find that women who come to you for styling, do they approach fashion as an expression of themselves? Or is that something that you sort of help them with? Because I feel like you know, we are really interested in fashion and we feel like it's an expression of ourselves and that's our relationship with fashion. But I wonder if the average woman who you work with, is she looking at it that way? Or is that something that you sort of talk her through?
I think 9 times out of 10, it's me that talks her all the way through, you know, because the first thing she'll say is, oh my God, I've gained all this weight. I'm going through menopause. I just don't look cute anymore. Or I'm too old for this. And I just don't believe in those words. Well, guess what? You've not been cute since a long, 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 long time, I tell her. You know, babies are cute. Kittens are cute. Puppies are cute. I just don't like this word cute.
Right.
Why can't we be amazing? Like, why can't we be other things? So please do not define yourself with what you're not. You are elegant. You're sophisticated. You're chic. You're stylish. You're strong. You know, so, I mean, I have to, like I said, I just have to build her confidence. And fashion isn't about hiding. It's about revealing that awesomeness from within. There's no such thing. And I don't believe in being too old. Yes. Okay. I'm totally fine if your fashion sense has changed over the years. I mean, mine certainly has. But don't say I can't do this because I'm old. You know, we've left the idea of the how-to dressing culture behind, and we have embraced more of me too sense of style. So I always tell them, you're a kick-ass woman. So it's all about, you know, building your confidence, building her confidence, and just making them feel super comfortable from the inside out.
Yeah, that is something that I have always hated, is those articles in the magazines that would be like, what to wear when you're in your 20s, to wear when you're in your 30s.
Oh my God.
Yeah, those are the absolute worst.
They are.
It's so
silly.
People
ask me, what are the rules? I'm like, I don't believe in rules. There are no rules. I mean, nobody, gone are the days of Stacey London.
Exactly.
You know, there are no rules.
I'm so glad you're out there telling women this because, you know, I feel like so many women at midlife are really struggle with it. And so we need more Razas out there.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so inspiring. I mean, it is so inspiring. Like, I'm not even in my 40s or 50s and I still feel women of every age need to hear this, you know, because there's just so many social factors or just people around us that keep on telling us what to do and what not to do and how we should be portraying ourselves. And I really think it's important for all of us, like Rosani said, that we've just got to listen to our own voice and speak our own, you know, whatever we wish. And we need to believe in that. And it only gets better with time and age, I think.
It's true. And I never believed that until I got older. I'm sorry, Roz.
Right? No. And I say, don't we always talk about men having a midlife crisis, you know, getting a convertible and a 25-year-old girlfriend and all that stuff? How about women? Like, why are we not talking about menopause and our hot flashes and all this stuff? I mean, we got to talk about these things. And, you know, we have to have a midlife crisis in order to have a midlife renaissance. And we are in the throes of a midlife renaissance right now. I mean, look at what women in their 50s are doing right now. Like, why are we not having these conversations?
So true.
Hey, you guys, thank you so much for listening. And sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to remind you one more time about Usual Wines. Go to www.usualwines.com. Use my code MEAN, M-E-A-N, to get $8 off on your first order. And you get a lovely collection of individual bottles. And the bottles are really pretty, too. Check out how lovely they are. You can totally use them for a vase or like a little candle holder after. Each one is 6.3 ounces, so it's like a heavy pour. And it's like the perfect amount to have with dinner on like a Tuesday night. The types they have are red blend, rosé, and a sparkling, and I highly recommend the sparkling. The others are really good too, but my favorite was the sparkling. And so there you have it. Go to www.usualwines.com, use my code MEAN, and cheers to that. Anhad, I'm curious to know, do you feel like your generation is, you know, less stringent with the rules of fashion and more sort of in touch with expressing themselves through fashion?
It's such an interesting question because it is such a two-pronged approach. I feel people on one hand are becoming more and more aware of what they want and what song they want to sing. But at the other side of the spectrum, we've got an entire generation of people who are just following the TikTok mode of living. Do you know?
Right.
I mean, I can't say it enough that for them, if it doesn't appease them in the first 3 seconds, it's not important to them. And this is such an important reality for us to kind of take in consideration as entrepreneurs or as women who are trying to create a difference, is that we've got to cater to the entire spectrum of people, which means we've got to create a product which is going to catch their attention in the first 3 seconds, but also is going to be able to, you know, stick on in the conversation for the next few minutes because they want to learn about something. So fashion, like Rozani said, that it's not about how old you are. You've got to redefine the words that describe you as a woman, you know, and today's generation is such that we choose the words that we want to portray to the world. So it's an amazing time and it's an amazing opportunity for all of us to kind of tell a story which has meaning, but at the same time is so attractive that people want to be associated with it or want to relate with something which is a bit more long-lasting.
Yeah, I find that sometimes younger consumers gravitate towards H&M and the fast fashion and
absolutely.
Zara because,
they do, yes.
You know, partly because of the price points. They're young and they might not have a lot of money. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on how to appeal to a younger consumer who might not have a lot of money, you know, to kind of attract them to a brand like yours. I don't know what exactly the price points are for your products, but I'd love to hear more about that and, you know, hear about how you can attract customers of varying ages.
Absolutely, yes. Prices are, they have the most important role to play when it comes to catching hold of a consumer. I mean, this is pure business talk, but you know, we've got the four Ps. You've got the price, the product, the place, the promotion. I mean, you've got to keep the price at a very comfortable level whereby we have a various, you know, we can cater to various economic, socioeconomic sort of consumer profiles. So, our prices roughly start at about literally like $30 for like a cushion, going up to $500 to $600 depending upon what sort of attire that one wants to have, either if it's a jacket, whether it's lined with silk or it's hand loom or whatever. I mean, we've got a various, you know, we've got various products to offer that can be done. But basically, the whole concept is that our consumer is, it kind of falls under the affordable luxury consumer where somebody wants to be fashionable, but they want to make an impact with what they're doing. They want to tell a story, but at the same time, they don't want to pay too much, you know, they don't want to pay too much money for it. So that's why it's very, very important to have a very comfortable price bracket. And yes, very importantly, we're trying to educate young lot so that they can start thinking in a manner which is a bit more sustainable. And something which, you know, also they buy something which will last them a longer time rather than just getting 2 to 3 wears out of it. That's something that we have to kind of educate the consumer about. And so that's where we are at.
I feel like that's a difficult process because consumers, especially in the United States, are so conditioned to get cheap products. Yeah. And, you know, even when I, you know, just with my husband, if I buy something, he's like, oh my God, why was that $150? And I'm like, because it wasn't made in, you know, by children in a factory, you know, it was made by hand, by people who were paid fairly.
Absolutely.
I find it's a very hard sell. Do you have any thoughts on, you know, how it's hard? I know it's a hard question, but how to sort of work on that education of the consumer?
Absolutely. I think it is so important to tell the consumer the process behind the product. You know, often we take so much for granted what's in front of us. And since it's just sitting in front of us on a shelf in a shop where everything is either on sale or either it's been marked down, we just take it so much for granted. So we see it as though it was just lying there and came straight for us. But we haven't really heard about the story before it landed to us, you know? And that is the most important thing that we need to advocate, that something that has been, I mean, it takes me 8 months to, you know, get one product from here to there. And then if for a consumer, it takes 8 seconds to decide whether or not they like it, do you know?
So
it's that education, which is why I feel it's so important to have women like Roz Auntie and like yourself who are telling the story of women who need to talk more about where something comes from and how it's made and how, who made your clothes? I mean, the fashion revolution concept of really, have you ever thought about who made your product and how long it took to make or how much money they received to kind of make that? You know, like these are things that we've got to start thinking about because the future is changing. Like Rosani said that, you know, times are changing. Everybody has to become more self-aware, has to become more conscious with whatever resources they have and how they choose to spend them.
I definitely see the shift coming. We are shifting to a more sustainable future. You know, you see it with everything. I mean, you see nobody's using straws anymore. Even Pete's, the cups now are designed differently if there are coffee. The other thing I wanted to talk about a collection is we're not mass producing. So we just don't want to put, you know, an item on sale because that's what happens when you produce in like these huge quantities. It's like there's all this stuff left over. And then what happens? You know, you mark it down, mark it down, mark it down. And in the end, nobody makes money.
And then it ends up in the landfill.
Yeah.
Yes. And we're encouraging also like bespoke, you know, we'll take your measurements and we'll make it to your fit. So you look at the product and that's, so this is kind of, this is where we are shifting gears. When the consumer has to get comfortable with the idea, you know, that there's only going to be four of these pieces and no piece is going to be alike. Because they're made by hand.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, I'm curious to know a little bit more about the Himalayan women. How did you connect with them and what's that relationship like?
It started back in about 2016, I'd say, between 15 and 16. We have a small farm up in the hills and we used to grow, we still do, we grow the curcuma longa, which is turmeric, which now is such an important part of our daily ritual in the Indian cuisine and now catching up in the international world as well because it's got all these amazing healthy properties and we must have, you know, it's got anti-inflammatory, all these amazing things that we need to, you know, think. So we started growing turmeric in our farm and that's when we had women who used to come to farm this turmeric. And when they used to come, they used to have a lot of time in between, you know, seasons. And then we always wanted to keep them employed with us full time. So that's when the concept of these looms started happening, that we kind of said, okay, let's just set up these spinning wheels and set up these looms and let's see what we can do. It took a long time to kind of put everything together and start that. So it was kind of then when we found out about these women. And then, of course, the village grew and the whole enterprise developed and we kind of started marketing it internationally. And yeah, so it's been an amazing journey from then to now, because now this is becoming something which has got so much value. And it's such a beautiful product because it's just so sustainable in the way it's made that we have nothing to lose. You know, it's a great way of kind of starting an enterprise. Yes.
Yeah. And are the women, are they all different ages? Are they older women? Yes. Or?
They start from about late 30s. Like my youngest woman is 34. She's got a family of three children. All of them are mothers. All of them have families. They all run their homes alongside working with the House of Hindi.
Oh, wow. That's so great. Well, I'm really, really excited to see where this all goes. And I can't wait until you can get your products into people's hands. Do you have a timeline at this point? I know it's really hard to imagine because everything is so fluid. But do you have any kind of timeline for when you might be able to?
Yes. Like Rosanti just mentioned, that we are definitely looking. We were planning to launch this summer, but I think because of COVID, the whole process has been delayed for about 6 to 8 months. So we're hoping that we can have a launch, either an e-commerce model or a real retail model, hopefully by the spring of 2021. I think with all the network that Rosanti and I have been able to create in the last few months, you know, during the pandemic time, it's a very nice learning way of how the consumer has evolved as well. So we have that 6 to 8 month buffer to kind of maneuver our product based upon the demand now as well. And Great. Kind of look at it around springtime. I think that would be ideal to kind of launch in a bigger manner now.
Yes. And let's hope that COVID is distant memory at that. That may be too optimistic, but hopefully it will at least be under control.
I believe in this moment, in this unprecedented time in the world, there is so much that we can do. And, you know, I think that can give more meaning and depth to our world, to see the world in a different light. And I'm just like dreaming about just a future where we can change the process, the structures, the infrastructures. You know, look what sheltering in place has done with climate change. So I'm just so inspired. And I just feel like we need to think about conscious consumption, our supply chains, our fair labor practices. It is exciting. Yeah. And whether or not we get there, this is the moment to dream big. We've never had this kind of time. So why can't we dream of everything that can be true in this world and, you know, our world? So even if we don't get there, at least we can try something new.
Yeah.
And I am dreaming. I'm dreaming big. So hopefully, yes, in the next 10 years, hopefully we are at a place where everybody's into sustainability and buying sustainable fashion and asking the question, who made my clothes?
Yeah, I hope so too. In one of my previous podcasts, she was the CEO of Rosebud Woman. We were talking because you mentioned climate change, and she said, you know, no one can say that everything can't change on a dime because it just did.
Right.
You know, like everybody was always saying like, oh, well, we can't make all these big changes so fast. It's like, well, the whole world just did make all those changes so fast.
Yes.
So it's like, I'm really hoping that all these things stick and that it won't just kind of quote, go back to normal. I don't think it will. I'm optimistic that, you know, a lot of this stuff that we're thinking about will continue and really, change our habits.
Yeah. I mean, people are just not buying like they used to. Everybody's, you know, it's the same, you know, they're burdened with the same question. Where are we going? We're not going anywhere. And what are we doing with these clothes? Like, I mean, all of us, I'm sure you cleaned your closet. I cleaned my closets.
Yes.
I mean, I had bags and bags full of clothes to donate. And, you know, where do these clothes go? Do we ever think, where do these clothes go?
I know.
Like when I chuck my toothpaste, where does my toothpaste go? That's the question I think we are all going to start asking.
And the thing now is that you can't, I don't know, nothing's open to donate. Like Goodwill's not open. Mm-hmm. So I have bags of clothes in my garage and I'm like, I don't know. Yes.
I know, me too. Yeah.
Well, Roz and Anhad, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. This has been such a pleasure.
A pleasure. It's been amazing.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
These are the conversations we need to be having.
Absolutely.
And thank you so much to even have this platform for women like us to come and tell our story. It is so, so phenomenal. Literally.
Oh my gosh. It's my honor, really. I feel honored to have you. So thank you.
Thank you so, so much. All right.
Well, good night or good morning to you, Anhad, and good night to you, Roz.
Good night to both of you.
Thanks so much for listening to The Mean Podcast. Please check out the online magazine at www.meanmagazine.com and get in touch if you or someone you know should be featured in the magazine or on the podcast.